this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody. Welcome for another episode of the Y'allitics podcast. I'm very excited about this one.
Well, why were you looking behind you here?
Are you wanted everywhere? And I don't know why I thought that one would be the one we had addressed, but then I forgot we had this one.
Y'all are nervous about cameras?
Yeah, right. Believe it or not.
Come on. I mean,
any recording device, I'm nervous about.
Listen, I just hope I get a word in edgewise in this podcast.
Good luck.
Let's tell us where, Wheeler, you start us off. Where are we right now?
You don't know that?
No, because we
and you're giving
like
me
five
grief for looking around for cameras?
Yeah. Farmers Branch. All right, Madison, Carrollton, or Dallas?
We are in Farmers Branch.
FBTX.
A is the correct answer. Oh, it could almost be F, because it could be all the above. We're very close to a lot of places. This is we're at Odd Muse, the brewery. It's not far from the Dallas Galleria. Galleria,
very
Dallas.
Close.
And it's kind of this confluence of all these different municipalities, but we are technically in Farmers Branch.
And I'm having a backyard rodeo. It's a German Pilsner. You're having tomato juice? Is that what that is?
It looks like it, doesn't it? This is a sour. It's called the Where Ya At, Y'AT. And I figured that fits well with Y'allitics, right?
It fits well with you, too, when we can't find
it
you.
It does, but I've been on this sour kick lately.
Wow.
With sour beers.
Yeah.
This one's got orange, cherry, passion fruit, and lime, and it's considered a hurricane sour.
Very
see,
apropos, huh?
I did some thinking this week. Usually it's you doing some thinking. I did some thinking this week because this is thematic.
So our guest this week, Troy Kimmel, he is a legendary meteorologist from the Austin area, worked in Bryan College Station for a while early on in the late 70s.
Legendary. I've got to get that in writing from you.
Right. I'll put it in writing for you.
I can vouch for it because I used to work with Troy.
Yep.
And I was also a viewer of Troy's. And when Troy told you, take cover, you knew to take cover. Like, you don't even question it and go, oh, well, let me check and make sure. If Troy said, look out today, you looked out today.
How long ago was that? When was that?
That was back in the early 2010s, late 2000s. Yeah, right.
Troy, let me ask you the first question then. Was Wheeler always as wound up even back then?
Jason Wheeler is Jason Wheeler.
That's the nicest, most neutral answer.
I've always enjoyed being around Jason in the TV station, other places that we work. A lot of fun in places that become pretty stressful.
We're not recording yet, Troy, so you can tell us. Yeah. We're not.
Okay. He's practicing this answer.
Could you get him out of here?
Yeah. No, it was an absolute pleasure working with Troy and also being a friend of Troy's. And Troy knows everything there is to know about weather and kind of everything else, too.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but I'll take that as a compliment.
This is like a compliment fest.
It really is here. Like I said, I hope I can get a word in edgewise.
You're on the sidelines of this one.
Indeed so. So we were talking about, we had trouble putting this podcast together. It took us a while to find somebody like you, Troy. We're watching all the cuts in D.C.
Yeah.
And the not one of the latest. The latest is Health and Human Services. But one of the earlier ones was NOAA, the weather forecasting agency. And we called around to different meteorologists, and people didn't want to really weigh into it, and they didn't want to really, you know, get involved in the politics of it. You are at a position now where you don't mind talking about it. So before we get going here.
Troy never minds talking about anything, it seems. But
I have my opinion.
But you've got a little more freedom now.
Absolutely.
You do. But lay out for people who don't really understand what all NOAA does. I think of Oklahoma, and they're monitoring the tornadoes. But they put out daily forecasts. They do everything from daily forecasts to hurricanes to fisheries.
Right. And that's the big thing about NOAA. And this is one thing in the media that if I could correct it, I would. Is that when it comes down to it, NOAA is the parent agency. They're part of the Department of Commerce. Mm-hmm. And NOAA is about, it's down a little bit now, it's about 14,000 people. You come down to the Weather Service, which is an agency within NOAA, and that's at now about 4,000, if not a little less from what I'm hearing, because the numbers are down. And so it's not NOAA every day that does the forecast. But NOAA knows a good thing, and this is one thing I felt very strongly about. NOAA knows a good thing. The National Weather Service is one of the most publicly viewed favorable agencies in the U.S. government. You're not necessarily finding all that many agencies the public feels good about. I mean, it's on the other side of the IRS, okay? and they're way at the top.
Because
and,
they've saved a lot of lives.
They have, and they have. We have weather radio. We know what, that we serve our weather office at WFAA. That it serves everyone, serves the media, and then we can get the word out and going from that. NOAA, don't think for a second that NOAA has not, they have always said, oh, Weather Service is us. And I'm sitting there going, well, no, then you're part of the of National Weather Service. You're the big boss up high. But I'll tell you one thing that is uncomfortable, but it needs to be talked about. For the last 10 to 12 years, NOAA has taken money from the Weather Service and put it into other things. And this is why staffing has been down in the Weather Service.
A lot of vacancies.
Yeah, and that goes back 10, 11 years. So we're now in a different time. Mm-hmm. With these cuts, this is something different, and you know what? NOAA still appreciates and knows how popular the National Weather Service is, and I'll tell you kind of a funny story about it is that there was at one time I can't get my source on the story, but the Weather Service wanted to create an emblem, and NOAA came back and said, no, you use NOAA. And I will tell you, the people in the Weather Service are responsible at that time. Stepped back and said, yes, we're going to have an emblem. And basically went back to NOAA and said, okay, if you're going to do that, you're going to take this seal away from us or this emblem away from us, then let's take the emblem away from the Army, Navy, Marines, and so forth. And, of course, that discussion ended very quickly after that. But, you know, we are where we are now with this. And frankly, guys, I'm not sure this is all that much of a political issue. Of course, everything is political in 2025, and it has its political side, but I think the best way to look at how we address this is to not look at it politically. Look at it sensibly. I got news for you in the Jason and Jason households. If you're in debt, like we're bankrupt. Our federal government is bankrupt. And if you're bankrupt in your house, what do you have to do? You have to make some tough decisions.
Are these good cuts, then, do you think, that are being made?
There are
1,029?
Well, there's a way of doing that, Jason, and it's largely been by chainsaw.
Yeah.
I think the better way, if I had my druthers, I'm from Austin, but I don't know Elon, so I can't do that. But if I had my druthers, I would have dealt with it more surgically. Is there bloat in NOAA? There's no doubt in my mind that there is. And when they're taking funding away from the Weather Service for the last 10 years and causing shortcomings in the Weather Service, then I'm going to look at NOAA and say, okay, if you're going to take that money back, let's find some bloat over here. Is there bloat in the Weather Service? Yeah, absolutely. Somewhere there is, just because they're, no offense, but all three of our households, there's probably things you could cut back on.
Mm-hmm. Wheeler's and, hair products are one thing you could cut back
on. That alone.
Man.
Yeah. Huge savings.
But... I think the best way to deal with this is to try not deal with it politically. Because nowadays, I can say I believe this politically, and people say, I'm canceling Troy. That's it, period.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that. It does not make any sense to me. I'm coming from 36 years in teaching at the University of Texas in Austin. And I'll tell you guys, I'm off track a little bit, but I'm going to tell you that one of our biggest issues in this country, and we have to deal with it with this, is the inability to critically think. And you're sitting there going, well, how's this do the what? Well, we're not making critical thinking decisions up in Congress and in the government.
Well, let me ask you this, Troy, because a lot of people have been saying that, listen, if you make these cuts in NOAA and the National Weather Service, you're going to impact safety for folks, especially as we go into spring storm season.
Yeah.
Do you think these cuts are going to affect the safety of all three of our households?
I don't think they are. I don't think they will. I think they are.
You think so?
Oh, I already think
it's already happening.
Oh, it's already happening. We have Weather Service offices in this country, Cheyenne, I think Riverton, Wyoming, up in the northern plains, which are down 40% in staffing. Mm-hmm. And how do you maintain that kind of staffing in severe weather? And their offices, these weather forecast offices, like the one that we have at the on Northern Cross Boulevard in Fort Worth, is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week office. Now, they may have 1 to 2 people working a day when the sun's out, but I'm telling you, in severe weather, the house is packed. When you're 40% down and you're dealing with tornadoes moving through North Texas, we're already being affected. There's no question. I'm not going to even entertain the fact that we're not already being affected.
But you still think there's bloat to cut in NOAA and the National Weather Service?
I think there is some in NOAA. I think there's less of it in the Weather Service.
And but you know, again, back to that point of you think it should be done much more surgically than what we've seen
Absolutely.
So far instead of this, you know, chainsaw effect.
Right.
There have been so many cuts, so many buyouts, and it's hard to really get figures because the government hasn't been terribly clear about who's let go and how many, et cetera, et cetera.
And then they, Jason, get hired back the next day occasionally, which
is
happening.
Because, wait, we didn't mean to cut
him.
We
didn't mean to cut you.
Which is, again, you know, going back to your analogy about the chainsaw, you know, if you did that surgically, maybe you know that you're cutting the wrong people. I want to just toss this out to you. This is from the Associated Press because they did a lot of work trying to get down to what's really happening and how many people have been affected. And you have such an intricate knowledge of these offices and how important they are and the different job titles and so forth. So the Associated Press says nearly half of National Weather Service forecast offices have 20% vacancy rates. That's twice what it was a decade ago, which fits with what you're saying about how NOAA has maybe pulled
Absolutely
some of that.
Absolutely true, and a lot of them have more than that.
And it says, experts said that the vacancy rates of 20% or higher amount to critical understaffing, and that 55 of the 122 sites reach that level. I mean, that's pretty staggering.
Yeah.
But then they break it down and they say there's almost two dozen offices across the country without a meteorologist in charge. This is the person who oversees that National Weather Service office. 16 have vacancies in crucial warning coordination meteorologist jobs, which interacts with emergency officials.
Emergency management, the media, everyone else. Those warning coordination meteorologists are one of the key people, along with the meteorologists in charge.
And they say in the Houston office, and this was just put out the other day, in the Houston office, there's a 30% vacancy rate, and they're missing both of those top positions. In Houston, Texas, as we go into severe weather season and
hurricane
right after that,
season.
Hurricane season.
Yeah.
What do you think when you hear figures like that?
I'm hoping there are a lot of clear days ahead. bottom line, I'm hoping there's a lot of clear days ahead, but you and I and all of us know that's not going to be the case. You go sit down at our weather office at WFAA and sit there and talk to those people, because every day, it just happens to be when we're recording this, the weather's looking good over the next 7 days. How often does that happen in March, April, and May?
It doesn't.
It doesn't, and if it does, you better just kind of hold your breath, because it's fixing to come back and get you.
Yeah, so what is the real effect of this? Let's say that these vacancies continue like this and perhaps even more people get cut or take buyouts, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What is the real boil down effect if you're sitting in that weather center at WFAA TV in Dallas or KHOU TV in Houston or KVU in Austin? What's the real effect as a meteorologist about to go on the air and try to tell people and guide them through a storm if you have these offices that are, 40%, 30%, 20% vacant?
Well, we get on the phone. Emergency management gets on the phone. The media gets on the phone and talks to the forecasters out there. Those are the experts, and they're dealing with it. We have experts in our weather office as well, and they're going to be able to see this, but we need the Weather Service. As part of the government, there's not a federal law for this, but there's guidelines on this, is the only agency that can officially issue watches, warnings, and advisories from a weather standpoint for the general public. Some people say, well, we do that at the TV station. I've got news for you, you don't, because there's not enough liability insurance on the face of the earth to protect a TV station or anyone else from issuing their own warnings. Weather Service likes to do that. What do? We act as a conduit. TV stations, emergency management act as conduits. I want to go back to something you said, Jason, just a second ago about how this affects us, these cuts that you quoted from the Associated Press. Let me say this, and I say it without even thinking twice about it. We may be short in the Weather Service, but I'm going to tell you what, the group of women and men that we have working in the Weather Service, these are professionals, and you know what? It hurts me in a way, because I know they're going to do their work, and if they may burn out because of this, and this is
the ones
what
who
I
are
worry
left.
About. Yeah, the people that are left. We've got to have that staffing back, and we've got to realize what the importance of that agency of the National Weather Service happens to be. And that's why I'm focusing more on the Weather Service than I am NOAA as the parent agency, which you understand,
sure.
And the people that are listening to us do as well. But I'm going to tell you, those people will give their lives, I can tell you that, at the Weather Service to make sure they're covered. And if it means someone has to work a 12-hour or 16-hour shift, I'll guarantee you they'll do it, because I know those people, mm-hmm. and they would give everything for that job. And that's what makes me so sad about what we're seeing now.
You know, we've heard some of these workers described as these cuts have taken place, not just with National Weather Service and NOAA, but with some of these other agencies, of, you know, they weren't performing up to standard, blah, 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 and so forth, and these emails that they've been getting saying, you know, we're letting you go because you're, you know, you're not meeting expectations, et cetera. And I want to invoke someone else I used to work with, mm-hmm. and that was the chief meteorologist when I was at in Miami at CBS there, Brian Norcross. I know you're familiar with him.
Brian's a good friend. I hope you haven't talked to him.
He kept a lot of people alive in Hurricane Andrew.
Brian,
I mean, he was the last one on the air, and I mean, it was amazing what he did.
No, he did, and you know, you go and look at that, and I tell you what job the Weather Service does, and I'm not involved in this anymore, but the media.
Yeah.
What our weather office at we don't really understand. I don't know every day when we spend 6 or 8 hours on nonstop tornado coverage at WFAA and our weather office. We're just covering it. We're telling people where they should take shelter, mm-hmm. and when they should, and when they're able to come out of shelter. Our media professionals in this country do a hell of a job. They mm-hmm. just are amazing people. It's that conduit to the general public. We don't enjoy the same conduit in emergency management, which is largely where I work now. Y'all do a job for us. We come to you with information, and the Weather Service comes to you. Our media folks in this country do an amazing job passing along, and we've seen that lately with another media group where they tried to get rid of a lot of weather TV weathercasters. And I can tell you some funny stories about that. That did not last long, if you recall. It was recalled.
I don't recall.
Because the weather gets very local.
No. And I can tell you, in the last couple of days in northeast Mississippi, I watched those folks at this little station where we all started out somewhere or another along the way, just doing a heck of a job, doing the same great job that we do at the WFAA, at the 8 Weather Office. Same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just... I don't want to – the Weather Service does a heck of a job, but our media partners in emergency management are just as important.
But on the subject of Brian, though, I saw him
on – I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
It's like old home week here.
It is.
Well. And you are.
Exactly.
Have we met?
I'm going to go move the cars.
Yeah.
So,
here's my keys. Yeah.
So Brian, you know, I'm friends with him on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And, you know, he basically put out an opinion piece about all of this the other day. And he spoke to what you were talking about with regard to these National Weather Service employees, and he said their commitment stands in dramatic contrast to the negative characterizations used to justify these mass layoffs.
Right.
And I mean, he went on to just talk about how incredibly dedicated these people are, and it's important for people to remember that, because again, they see that forward-facing meteorologist on their television channel or hear them on the radio. But it's these people who are behind those people helping them with the information.
And in a lot of cases, this stuff goes back to another question that Jason brought up. There are agencies that support the Weather Service very strongly in NOAA that's not part of the Weather Service. We have modeling groups that look at modeling in the atmosphere, by the way, very important. Satellite group. It's not part of the Weather Service. Mm. It's part of NOAA.
Mm.
And then we also have our climate folks in Asheville, North Carolina. They're a part of NOAA. Now, here's one thing I wish. If I had a wish today, I would bring the modeling people in, I'd bring the satellite people in, and bring the climate people in to the National Weather Service.
Hmm. Under one umbrella.
That would be brought in, we would pull it out of NOAA, put it in the Weather Service, and properly fund it.
Hmm.
Supporters of these cuts say that, you know, listen, why can't private companies like AccuWeather or Weather Underground do these jobs, and we stop spending tax dollars on this?
it's going to be very difficult for them to do it. But I'll tell you, I have good friends that are colleagues at AccuWeather and these other places as well. They do an amazing job. They do a lot of work for private forecasting. They do a fair amount of work for emergency management. We have we usually have a side group that we have in addition to the Weather Service that we'll use to get a second opinion in emergency management.
Can they not do the same job, though?
They can't do the same job, not with the warnings. There, again, someone would have to give them authority to issue those warnings, and that sort of, and they issue warnings, but they do it for their private sector constituency.
Right.
And but I just don't think that we have that structure. That structure's in place. We have NOAA Weather Radio that's coming out of all the weather forecast offices, right, like in Fort Worth. And that has, you've got, I forget how many weather radios we've got in North Texas. Mm-hmm. But there, it comes right out of their office as well. It's fed off their products. It would be very, very hard to duplicate that. It would take millions of dollars and, in my opinion, many years.
And aside to radio, how about the weather satellites? I mean, AccuWeather, do they own any weather satellites? Is Weather Underground, or are they using the NOAA satellites?
There are some privately owned satellites, and maybe some people using some of that data. But
not
no,
coverage we, like what no. the National Weather Service
when you,
has.
When you see a satellite picture tonight on the 6 o'clock news, that is coming off the NOAA satellites. Again, I'd like that to be the Weather Service satellites. But, it's coming out of the folks that keep those things going up there, and they do an important job. And these people over in NOAA, I keep talking about there's bloat to cut in NOAA. I'm going to tell you, probably not in the modeling or the satellite, the climate division. Get that down here in the Weather Service.
What is the bloat, I wonder? I mean, we always hear bloat, but what is it? Are these accountants? Or I mean, I don't know.
I don't think so, but I think it's something government-wide. I think there's just a lot of, I think in this process of us having to, I think as the president has said, take our medicine, we have to look at all these sort of things and we have to do it, and they've chosen to do it chainsaw fashion. Again, I would prefer that we have done it surgically, go back and look at these positions. There are some areas that can be cut, but I'm going to tell you what, these four weather forecast offices, the 122 of them around the United States, in Guam, in Alaska, in Puerto Rico, and here in the continental United States, those are not where you cut.
That's meat. That's not fat.
That's lean meat.
And maybe some bone
in
there, too.
The chainsaw has caught some of the bone, so, yeah.
To Jason's point, though, about the idea, and this has been talked about, like, let's just have, you know, private enterprise, for-profit companies come in. They can do this, et cetera, et cetera. I'll bring in Norcross again, because I think he addressed this as well. And he was saying, you know, that's kind of a concern there, because you want uniformity. You want authoritativeness there. You want this government agency that has credibility to be putting it out there for everybody, so that you don't have some people getting information but not other people getting information, which you have to worry about when there's a profit system involved. And B, you know what the media landscape is like and what conversation landscapes are like. Everybody's in their own silos and they have their own facts, and those people over there have their own facts and those have theirs. You need, don't you, an authoritative agency that speaks to everyone, that says, get inside now.
Right.
Trust us.
And the National Weather Service has that, Jason. We have the infrastructure. It's already been established, I think, pretty leanly. I mean, 4,000 people total in the Weather Service. Mm-hmm. Now, that's including some of our southern region people in Fort Worth, national people at headquarters. But, again, a lot of that is down there at the local office. My good friend Bill Proenza, who used to be Southern Region Director for the National Weather Service, who's retired now, always said the government that serves the people the best is the government closest to the people. Hmm. The National Weather Service and your weather forecast office in Fort Worth, Shreveport, Norman, Austin, San Antonio, San Angelo, out at Midland, those are the government closest to the people. They know those people. Those warning coordination meteorologists in those offices know all the media people. They know all the emergency managers. I'm just going to tell you, that infrastructure, Jason, would take years and billions of dollars to replicate in the private sector. That's not where we need to go now.
And not only do they know the people, they live among those people.
Absolutely.
Their house is right there, right. too. And wouldn't you say, I've seen it and I believe it, that the U.S. does a better job than any place in the world in forecasting?
Yeah, you go look up some weather service agencies or the weather forecast agencies of the various countries. It's hard to really get the information. Now, their website, the Weather Service, I've kind of kicked tail on this a little bit. I think they could do a better job with some of their websites. But if you want to find a forecast for out here at Canton, Texas, mm-hmm. I can do it pretty quickly on that website. Mm-hmm. And they're going to need to do a little more work on them. But at the same time, I just don't think we can replicate that. We can't afford to replicate that. And it would take us so many years that we would lose lives in the process.
Mm-hmm. Can AI not do any of this modeling? And
it's starting
and,
to
and forecast what's coming
does
based
it do a good
on
job?
Well, I can't tell you that, Jason. I'd have let the secret out. But there are people in our now personally AI. Of course, I'm this 67, 68 year old guy, so I kind of repel from anything related to AI. But what I'm seeing here has impressed me a little bit, but it's also scared me.
Why so?
It's scary. It's just scary to look at it sometimes. But I've also seen where, and this is the things that trickle up in our newsroom across town, is when AI is used for things where it shouldn't be. And I'm aware of a situation in a school district that happened recently. AI. But it tried to go back and find students. They were identifying students, but it was all done by AI. This part scares me. I will tell you from the modeling standpoint, the people at the model, the folks that are left of the modeling area within NOAA, they'll tell you they're impressed by some of the things that they're seeing.
Hmm. Could it not issue watches and warnings based on certain factors that happen, certain measurements?
You need the human factor there.
You do?
Just like we need the human factor at the National Weather Service office in Fort Worth, but we also need the human factor in the WFAA weather office. People know and love the people that are on the air that pass that. And you know what? The media people give credit to the Weather Service. Service office in Fort Worth has issued this warning. Mm-hmm. I just think people, I can't see in my lifetime that is going to change that much.
Why do you need the person still?
Because it gets down to looking at Doppler weather radar and really getting down to detail and finding details within the imagery you're seeing. And I just think you need people.
And
I think
that
you need
trust,
warm bodies.
Isn't there that trust component, too? Because,
no
Troy,
question.
You've done this for a long time. You're in the trenches with these people at these NWS
right.
offices. And sometimes it's maybe even just a tone of voice, isn't it, where they're saying to you, Troy,
yeah.
Oh, my God, you
right.
know, a computer can't do that with you.
Right. And you know, we have behind the scenes, you know, we have in your weather office, in our emergency management office in Austin, we have chat. We have a way to internally chat back with the weather. And you start losing bodies over there, there's less person to chat. But I'll tell you, I saw a chat from a weather service office over the weekend in an area where we had West Tennessee, where we had 8 fatalities. And when they're on chat from the weather office in Memphis, and they've all gone caps on that, tell people to go to shelter now, please. This is when the Weather Service is doing that, it makes the hair stand on the back of my head thinking about what I saw. They're screaming at people through saying, please get on the air and tell these people to get out of these areas. There's no question, Jason. There's a trust, and I think that trust extends back to our offices, the media offices, to emergency management, but I also believe because of that good reputation of the Weather Service, that's deserved. That goes back to the National Weather Service as well.
I've seen from the Associated Press and from other reporting that experts are saying that these Doge cuts could lead to worsening forecasts. My question is, and a lot of folks who are watch the news might say, well, how will we know if this is actually impacting the forecasts?
You know, I think that the men and women at the National Weather Service are that damn good. I think that I think they'll keep that from happening to the day they walk in and out of those office doors, when they walk out.
To just keep it staffed constantly?
Well, I think they can. They have done it so far. And I did see one office that's not around North Texas, but I did see one office in that stormy part of the country to our northeast a couple of days ago that had to hand off some warning responsibility just because it was getting so busy. But that's not unusual sometimes in situations where communication lines go down and that sort of thing. But what really concerns me more than that, and this is what may end up coming out of this, and no one really wants to talk about it, is that we have 122 weather forecast offices across the U.S.
Yeah.
I have this feeling that we're going to have less in the future. Mm-hmm. And what that means, every territory, every county, every parish, for Louisiana to our east, every one of those has a weather service office responsible for them as far as forecast and for watch, warnings, advisories. When you go over here and you cross across into Smith County, over into Tyler, you're going to the Shreveport's area.
Yeah.
And this is where they're coordinating with Fort Worth. What's coming out of Canton and down I-20?
Mm-hmm.
And what's moving toward us? And they communicate constantly. And they're also communicating with who, Jason? They're communicating with the media in their market. They're communicating. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't think AI is going to be able to do that. And I think if it does, I'd be a little worried.
Well, if they merge some of those offices, though, Troy, let's say they do, what's lost there if a DFW person has to keep on communicating all the way to the Texas border?
Well, part of the problem is all of a sudden you're going into a whole new group of territories, counties, or parishes that you've never worked in before. And so you're having to cover for an area you don't know that well. Now, the computers can help them in warnings. Their computers, if they put up a warning, if Fort Worth were to cover, they have a couple of offices or backup for in case communications problems. And they can do that. They can issue warnings pretty quickly, and the computer will pull up the cities.
But these people know it like the back of their hand.
They do know it
who
like
are out
the back
there.
Of their hand. And if we lose a couple of offices in Texas, it just means that and they would move the remaining people into some of those other offices,
sure.
So that staffing would go up, in theory.
Yeah.
But I still would like to see us try to retain the 122 while we can.
Yeah.
But let me make sure I understand, though. What would San Angelo, the folks in the San Angelo office, I presume there is one there.
Yes.
What would they know that the folks in Dallas could not do?
Well, they know the emergency managers in San Angelo and Tom Green County. And other areas, they know the emergency manager in Abilene, and they know the emergency manager in Junction. I've been in that office. I have friends that work in that office, and they talk to these people all the time. I'm just telling you, it's just that familiarity with that, what we call county warning area, which is really parish or territory or county warning area.
And maybe they know what that certain creek in that subdivision does every time.
They don't maybe know that. They know exactly what it takes. They have hydrologists in our local offices that know how much rainfall will produce that much flooding on the Trinity River.
Right. I want to ask you, it's not even so much just the lack of people perhaps in some of these offices, but even the ones who are left, aren't they? They're not flying blind, but right now they might be flying with one eye covered, because we're seeing in a lot of these offices now weather balloons that are no longer going up because they don't have the staff to put them up or whatever, and there have been cuts and so forth. How vital are those weather balloons, Troy? That sounds like an ancient technology, but how vital is that?
Well, in a way, it is ancient technology. It started, the weather balloons began in the early 40s, and it was tied to the aerial nature of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And what they realized real quickly, and commercial aviation was not anything like it is now, but back in those days, they were forecasting for the ground. You had maybe airplanes that came and went from Southwest Airport out here back in the old days, out here south of DFW. And they observed weather, and they forecast that weather at the ground. And that's what they worried about. Well, with World War II and that coming along, they sit there and go, well, we probably need what's going on up there as well. And then that also assists in forecasting.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fortunate in the state of Texas, those upper air balloons have continued. We call them Raywin sons or radio sons. And they're released twice a day on at the weather office in Fort Worth. They do that. They're not something inexpensive to do. It's a cost center. It involves some money. But we, in the Northern Plains, because of staffing, I know for a fact that Cheyenne is one office that I've been to before that I know has ceased at least, they may have ceased upper air soundings completely. and it just has to do with short staffing.
Wyoming can get some nasty weather fast, too.
Yeah, if you don't believe that, go up there, because I've hung out around Cheyenne and Laramie and places like that.
I got pummeled in a hailstorm while driving through Wyoming.
Yeah, and in Cheyenne, that eastern part of Wyoming in northeast Colorado is really the hail cap. We think sometimes Dallas-Fort Worth is.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you want some hail that will wipe you out. Mm. Go up there north of Denver or east of Denver. But we're seeing that happen. I'm hoping when the next storm rounds the corner out there that they'll look and at least say, well, you know what, we've suspended the balloon there, but we have this big storm coming. Let's put up a couple of soundings now. It's critically important. There's been some discussions among meteorologists in some of our internal chat groups of late, national groups, about the importance of these. People ask, well, you know, one group that we have here in Dallas is our friends, and I have good friends that work in meteorology over Southwest Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Southwest Airlines, a number of years ago, put some instruments, special instruments, and all airplanes generally have them, but they've added extra instrumentation. Mm. And they actually, as they take off and land, can provide some of that information.
Mm.
But that balloon's going not straight up, it's drifting with the wind. But as the plane goes up and down, it's covering a much wider area. But we're getting some of that information mainly because of FedEx and Southwest Airlines right here in the Metroplex.
I did not know that.
Because they contribute that. The airlines have always owned that system. You've seen it if you fly overseas, you've seen it on the screen, 49 below Celsius, you know, or whatever you're flying. That information is radioed back. It's absorbed on the skin of the aircraft.
Hmm.
And as it flies along, that's reported back. The airlines have owned that system, and they've been protective of that system as proprietary.
Hmm.
But what Southwest Airlines and FedEx did a couple of years ago is they added some equipment, and guess what they said? They said, you know what? We're going to make this readily available, and it's readily available to the WFAA weather office or private meteorologist to look at, but it doesn't take the place of the upper air sounding. It's more frequent because upper air soundings, those balloons, are twice a day.
Yeah.
How many, you want to go out and count planes at DFW today? I mean, they're coming up and down all the time, but more importantly at Dallas Law because of Southwest presence over there. But, you know, we need those sound, and it sounds archaic.
Mm-hmm.
Those things used to be big old boxes that would go up on there, and nowadays they're very, very small. But they're still as expensive. You have to have lighter than air gas. We've had to go from helium to hydrogen, and that's created some problems at some places, especially where we have weather service offices located with colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm.
But is still very important, and it's something that concerns meteorologists overall. That's a big concern right now, that we've got to get that system, we've got to get it restored.
And most people don't even think about this stuff. Have those meteorologists in those group chats, have some of them just been freaking out in these past couple of weeks
by what
they're seeing?
I am seeing that in the group chats, and you know what, Jason? I think that's part of the problem. And I understand where people are coming from, because their colleagues are being cut and everything else, but this is not the time to freak out. I'm going back to households here. We got three households here, okay? Bottom line is this. If you've got a cut, if you run around the house and your head catches on fire, it's not really doing a lot of good to try to figure out the finances in these three households. It's the same way in the government, in my opinion now. Yeah, they've gone through with a chainsaw. And what I think I'm beginning to see this now, guys. I go back to the critical thought. One thing, I don't know if y'all caught, but it was interesting. Early on in the cuts, did you notice that the Department of Defense, you see what they did? When they came in and said, we're going to start making these cuts, Department of Defense representatives walked right over to DOJ and said, here's some areas we suggest that would be good areas. No one else in the government had done that. If we as meteorologists would sit back, not let our heads catch on fire, and sit back and say, okay, where could we make cuts and still maintain the service we provide to the media and to emergency management? Where could we do it? I think we would get a little more respect. Mm-hmm. We've got to quit this running around with our heads on fire and sit there and pull back a little bit. And if we really want to protect the men and the women that work for the National Weather Service and for NOAA and the modeling and the satellite and the climate folks, let's look at where we can make cuts, make some recommendations, and try to trim things down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of this, as I told you, I don't believe is political, and I'm not going to become political, but I will tell you this. It's been 23 years since our elected representatives have produced a balanced budget. That's a problem. And unfortunately, now we're at the crossroads. We have to make some decisions. And again, I don't tell you which way I lean either way, but I have to have respect for the president when he says we've got to make these changes. We've got to trim it back a little bit.
Weather shouldn't be political, but would you have been nervous talking about this if we rewound to like November of last year when you were still, you know, teaching at UT Austin? Would you be nervous about talking about this? Because this has become political.
No, I agree with that, but I really wouldn't have, because UT has been great, a great place. By the way, I'm Nagy. I have to point that out.
I know that.
And you're teaching at UT.
And so
wow.
I'm teaching at UT. And people say, how do you do that for 36 years? And I said, jeez. Fine. I'm the one that produces the grades, so I'm happy. And I got to tell you, too, that and I have to say this because I know there are a lot of folks in the Metroplex in North Texas. But I'm a Longhorn, too, because yep. You can't do that for 36 years without being a Longhorn.
Yeah, it's a great place.
I think on Thanksgiving Day, I think you'll know which way that I'll lean.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a tough day,
but,
isn't it?
But I'm just telling you that we, you know, I just think we need to kind of pull back a little bit, and it's tough. And I'm going to tell you one thing, Jason, that you haven't talked about, either one of you, and I'm going to tell you it's real, is the depression that we're seeing in some weather service people, that they just don't know. It's pretty bad when you worry. They saw people that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on an 8-to-4 shift, at 3 o'clock they walked in and said, you're out. Mm-hmm. They saw that. And so I worry about that. I have good friends in the weather service that I've increased my contact to and just making sure they're doing okay. Mm-hmm. But these people are caring and they're damn hardworking. And let's just see what we can do to get some of the trim it down a little bit, not take out bone, and just see where we can go with it, and then get these weather forecast offices staffed back up the way they should be. That is most critical, because that is what serves the people the best, the government closest to the people, as Bill Proenza would say.
Final question for me. When it comes to these cuts, what are you going to be watching for in the next 6 months?
It's going to be interesting with the severe weather we've seen lately, not only in North Texas, but particularly east of here over towards Shreveport, Memphis, Jackson, places like that, is how the spring transpires, because we're not through yet. Here we are in the month of April, and it's going to get bad again, and we're going to have to deal with it. And my heart is with those folks in the weather service that just work so hard all the time. I think sooner or later you're going to see probably more and more offices that are more – it's not that it's not transparent, because it's there. You can see it in their plans. But I think you're going to see more and more offices that say, look, this mid-shift, we may have to let another office pick up the slack for us. I think you're going to see more of that. But again, this infrastructure, Jason, that you were talking about, it's going to be hard to replicate. Just think about it. You have to decide what county, parish, you'd have to decide who's going what. And by the way, what happens when someone wants to sue those people? The Weather Service enjoys not being able to be sued for a bad warning. But I'll tell you, TV stations and emergency management, there's no way. I just don't think you can build that up that quick. I think we're going to see some thinning out of the offices. I'm really worried about some of the people in the Weather Service, because I know they're having really a rough time. We need to really support them. And then I'm particularly worried to some degree about what I'm hearing about the upcoming hurricane season. I'm not a tropical guy. But at the same time, if you're along the Gulf Coast, all it takes is one. Mm-hmm. You've been down there before, Jason. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one. It doesn't make any difference what's happened the rest of the year anywhere else. And if you don't believe that, look at Northwest Florida last year and look at the Eastern Appalachians. And by the way, you sit there and go, Eastern Appalachians, that off the Gulf Coast? Yeah. Mm. When that storm went in there and dropped historic, catastrophic amounts of rainfall.
I have two more, but that's okay, because Whiteley always comes back with another one after he says.
Listener, be advised, another 20 minutes to go in this podcast.
Okay.
Solid 20.
Yeah. All right, so I'm just curious about the timing of this. So what if you do these big cutbacks of these agencies at a time of, and this is going to, you know, it gets people riled up when you say the words climate change.
Right.
But, you know, something's going on, and whether you call it man-made, natural, whatever.
Right.
things have changed, and right. we've seen these billion-dollar-plus storms. Last year, we had almost a record, but that record was set by the year before that for those billion-dollar-plus right. years that we've had damage. It would seem like a difficult time to be cutting back in these places when we're experiencing more and more of this.
Well, one thing, too, about the word climate, let's talk about that for just a second, because if you want to rile people up, you can rile. And really, you know what, guys? It shouldn't do that. Because I will tell you, and I don't have permission to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Here in Fort Worth, we lost at our local forecast office a guy by the name of Dan Huckabee. And Dan was a very close friend. He took one of the buyouts. Dan was, in addition to a great forecaster, and amongst all the great forecasters at WFO Fort Worth, what we call them, Dan was their climate focal point. And you're sitting there going, well, so Dan tells us about changing climate. Not really, because the climate focal points at local offices, you know what Dan did? He worked on the long-term database. I mean, talking about the past records for DFW Airport, for Dallas Love, for Fort Worth Meacham. And by the way, even the small towns, for the people out there that where we have, like at Graham, Texas, out west, and small cities, he helped to maintain that. Now, they'll continue to do that. The Weather Service office in Fort Worth is going to pick up instead of the great work that Dan has done out there. But at the same time, that's going on across the country. We need those climate records. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater just because when you think changing climate, I don't want you to think about what Dan's doing, really. He will tell you what he thinks about climate stuff, but he's working on past records. Mm-hmm. Climate is, when you look at weather is weather is the current state of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It's sunny, it's cloudy, there's a thunderstorm. And climate is the collective state of the Earth's atmosphere over a long period of time. Now, there are going to be people that say, well, wow, that time you spent on the air with Jason and Jason, that was a long period of time. When we talk about climate, we're talking about generally 30-year averages. And so there are men and women, even in the Weather Service, in our local offices that deal with climate, and I don't want to see them attacked because they're sitting there maintaining a database for us. So when we can call them from the WFAA weather office and say, what was the high on July 4th, of 2001? They can tell you in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. They can tell you because of the work done by the men and women of the Weather Service. Now, when you get up higher, we have our climate unit in Asheville, North Carolina, and those folks help to store all that. It's an amazing place in Asheville where they store all this data. And then you have people working more in the Climate Prediction Center, which is being brought down, I believe, into the Weather Service now. And they deal with the 8 to 14 day outlook and the 3 and 4 week outlook that we have, which are useful. It's not a forecast, really. It's an outlook. And then you have people that do the long-term 30, 90 day forecast. And then you have people that do what? They work with Southern Oscillation and work with the longer term stuff. And I'm not saying those people should be cut either, because they do an important job and very important contributions. But let's wind it back a little bit on the climate stuff. People tend to recoil when you hear about it, and I can walk out here on the street and say something about climate, and I guarantee you someone will club me over the head. And I'm sitting there going, oh, I'm talking about what the high was over in Tyler 4 years ago. I'm going back to climate data set, right. And I'm looking at it.
Last thing for you. Should we be watching this even more so in Texas than perhaps other parts of the country? Because we get all of these perils. We get the wind. We get hurricanes. We get tornadoes. We get hail. We have huge wildfire risk here. They deal with that, too. Should we be more concerned than a lot of other places around the country just because we get so much of this stuff?
I agree. Texas is an interesting place. If it's not one thing, it's the locusts, whatever they arrive. But at the same time, there are other areas as well. I came this weekend, was working with some folks up in North Mississippi, and tornadoes for 2 hours, and then all of a sudden they got flooding, and they got flash flooding going on, and then they got hurricanes along the coast. Same thing in Texas. And we didn't think wildfires would be that big a deal because of Texas and where it's located. Mm-hmm. We have about half the state that is in long-term, most of the time, in a deficit of moisture. Mm-hmm. Half the state's in surplus. when you live in that kind of state, that line's going to move east and west. Mm-hmm. And lately, it's done what? It's moved back to the east. Mm-hmm. So more state in drought, more of the wildfire danger.
Mm. Well, Troy, this has been enlightening. Yeah. I told you he knows something about everything.
Right.
And I told you he could give me a run for my money. Talking.
It's a close run.
I'm just glad we haven't got the days back in Austin and everything. Jason, tell some of those stories. And
yeah, I'm happy about that.
No,
too,
I am too.
We should have you tell some of those stories.
No. It's funny in a way. I look back, and there are times in the newsrooms that when I was working in the business that I'm not especially proud of. But then occasionally I'll run across an old news director, someone I'll run into, and I'm sitting there going, oh, wow, I remember that day when that happened. I ran into one not too long ago, and she just laughed at me. She said, that was the most fun. We fought. And now it's all over with. We fought. It was more fun.
It's always great when they look at that and laugh.
You do later on down the road. And after all, what are we trying to do? We're trying to serve the public through our newsroom, through our weather office, through the sports office, giving people information. That's what our job is.
And our passion's involved.
And by the way, I hate to tell you all this, but I've just heard that in some, media outlets, there may be a little ego. So,
Welcome to politics.
Whitely represents that,
But no, it's all fun. And I look back at it, and there are people who ask if I have any regrets since I left KI in Austin when you were there before that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I made those decisions. I probably have some regrets in life, but I'm not going to sit here and talk about them on this show.
It's another podcast. That's
another episode. Podcast, yeah.
But at the same time, I have so many friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have so many friends from media that nowadays they look back at it and we just kind of laugh. And, anything you can live through, it ends up being good. So I have so many friends and those friendships that we treasure.
Well, I'm happy to count you as one.
Hey, same thing here. And this guy, too,
I don't know if we're ready to jump him in
Okay.
Troy, great insight. Thanks for letting me get a couple of questions in there. I appreciate that, man.
Troy, thanks for doing this with us. And, before we sign off here, a big thanks, since you talked about this, to all those National Weather Service professionals, those who are still at it, and especially those who have lost their jobs. A big thanks for everything that you do. I mean, I've been through tornadoes, I've been through hurricanes, and I've been in that bathtub with the cushions over the head and all of that because of you. So big thanks for everything you've done.
Hey, it's been a pleasure to be with y'all guys today. This is fun.
Special thanks to Obmuse and Brewing Company and Farmers Branch, Texas. Thanks for having us, Bobby and team.
Yep.
We appreciate that.
The sour was the right choice.
You haven't had half of it,
The
dude.
Where y'all at hurricane sour. I pace myself.
There you go.
Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.